Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sassano. Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Ether. Today, I have Austin Griffith on the podcast. Austin is an Ethereum developer and director of research at Gitcoin. He recently launched the Burner Wallet, a way to send DAI to people instantly and at minimal cost. Thanks for joining me today, Austin.
Thanks for having me.
Definitely. So before we kind of dive into the Burner Wallet and some other things I want to talk about and what you've been working on, I always like to start with some basic background information. So can you kind of tell me a little bit about yourself and how you eventually got involved with Ethereum?
Word. Yeah. So I think it's probably about, it could be 2 years ago now. So usually I say I've only been in a year and a half, but I think I've been in for like 2 years now. It's close to 2 years, but basically I got in and I started building games and just playing around with kind of token mechanics and how, you know, building a game on the blockchain is different than anything I've ever done before. And there were things like ships would sail as each block is mined and stuff like that. There's a whole new paradigm to deal with and deploying code to IPFS. But in the long run, after the game was built, it was just kind of clunky and it was hard to get onboarding and no one came and played the game. So then I started focusing on, well, how do we get people in and how do we get people using it and trying to provide, you know, some sort of value within the ecosystem, and sort of stumbled my way through for a while and then came across the idea of meta transactions and how we can abstract away the idea of gas and having to have ETH and someone can just sign a transaction and we can still be cryptographically backed, but without all the headaches of some of the onboarding of buying and holding ETH. And then so that's when about the time I got hired at Gitcoin. And then from there, it was a lot of just one week projects where we would just learn about commit reveal or minimum viable payment channels or counterfactual instantiation. And then we started thinking maybe we could use this concept of this web wallet, this burner wallet that sort of I just played around with at DevCon. But then actually we're like, well, we could maybe use it for ETH Denver. And so then there was another build up to ETH Denver. And that kind of leads us to here where we're using the burner wallet.
Nice, nice. So you're currently, you know, at Gitcoin. Is burner wallet like independent or are you working on it with the Gitcoin team or how does that kind of work?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of independent. It's sort of, I kind of had the idea before and then I joined Gitcoin and it kind of like sat on the back burner. And then leading up to ETH Denver, we spent a lot of time working on it. So definitely built it while I was working at Gitcoin, but it's not really funded or anything right now. Basically, I'm just getting a paycheck from Consensus through Gitcoin. And the burner wallet is just this open source thing that we started working on, but it's not an entity or anything yet. It's just a repository.
Gotcha. Yeah. And we'll get into funding and that's obviously cool. A hot topic right now. Yeah. So after we can, and so you mentioned meta transactions. I remember, I think that's kind of the first time I saw maybe you blog or tweet. That's how I ran across you. Have you seen Gnosis Safe? Is it your implementation or your idea? Or are they just kind of iterated on it? But now they have the ability to pay transaction fees and things other than ETH, which is pretty cool.
Oh yeah. So that wasn't my idea. I probably copied code from them. Like between Gnosis Safe and Uport, they were the two kind of doing signed transactions. It just, and of course like Universal Logins and Alex Van de Zandt, but the idea of signing transactions sort of, for me came together in the Bouncer proxy repo. And that's one that I put together where you have this proxy that sort of acts as your identity, and then you sign messages and send it to that, and then it does the EC recover and then executes some kind of action. And that's almost exactly how delegated execution works within the Gnosis Safe, but they pioneered it. I just strapped things together with duct tape.
Gotcha. Well, in general, it's a cool idea, and I enjoyed reading your post on it back in the day. So I think there's a lot of cool potential around that idea, but I guess that's for a different conversation. So I want to shift a little bit and obviously talk about, you know, we've already talked about it, but Burner Wallet, which is one of your projects right now, and to be honest, kind of one of my favorites out there. And I think it's even already spurred. I talked with Connects about the Dai card a few weeks back, and there's a lot of kind of ideas around these quick, feeless layer two Dai payment solutions. So I guess first, before we kind of get into the details of it, for those that maybe haven't seen or played with the Burner Wallet, can you give a quick rundown of exactly what it is?
Word, for sure. Yeah, so the Burner Wallet is a web wallet. So you don't have the onboarding hurdle of having to download a wallet. And then, I mean, the second most important thing is I don't hit you with the seed phrase right away. If you land on the Burner Wallet, it's just xdai.io, xdai.io. If you just go to that site, it's going to notice that you don't have an account yet. It's going to generate you one, and then it's just going to store your private key right in local storage. And that's obviously a security concern, and we can go into that some more. But the trade-off there is now you can just send and receive very, very quickly from within your web browser without any of the hurdles previously kind of imposed on us. And it runs on the XDAI network by POA. So you've got 5-second block times, super cheap transactions, low cognitive overhead because it's pinned to the dollar. And then on top of all of that, it's just a web wallet, so you don't have to download anything. You just go to a website and you can send money around.
Yeah, I found it very interesting. Like the first time I went on, so many, I guess I would put it not in bad habits, but things that I'm used to weren't there. And I was like, oh man, there's no seed phrase. And like, you could technically use it without MetaMask, which I want to get into a little bit as well. But what kind of gave you the inspiration to create this wallet? I mean, obviously it's, at least to me, one of the most unique implementations of a wallet I've seen to date.
So kind of coming off the momentum from some of my meta transaction posts, I was invited to come talk with my buddy Alejandro about some of their Venezuela research and development within, could they put a wallet in hands down there where it's really needed? And they were coming up with like a Dai wallet. They were trying to make a very, very simple implementation of a Dai wallet that would run in Android. And kind of when we sat down and had that talk, I was like, well, you could just do it in a browser, and then it just loads up on any device that has a web browser. And I think we kind of have the same idea, and we're just kind of going on different forks with it, but we'll probably eventually arrive back at the same place. But the main inspiration, I think, came from that discussion, and then just the idea that I had of just generating an account for someone when they first land, going back to Dapparatus and some of my component libraries, where trying to make Web 3.0 feel as much like Web 2.0 as possible. One of those initial things is if they land and they don't have MetaMask, let's just generate an account and connect to, you know, Infura or whatever node we can, and just try to do everything we can do for the user without them having to, you know, have MetaMask, have an account, have ETH. And so the Burner sort of came out of this idea of just, let's just have a website, let's have them land on it, let's generate them a key when they get there, and then what can we do with that? And then there's just sort of this magic moment once you put all those things together where I have $5 and I send you $5, and it's like this, I hit scan, I type in five, I hit go, and then it usually, Arjun and I were just joking about this, usually you kind of walk away, right? When you fire off an Ethereum transaction, it's sort of like a set it and forget it, I'll see you in a while kind of thing. But with this, there's something about the threshold of only about 5 seconds that it just feels much more immediate. And it just seems like, oh, you just sent me that money. And it's not like, okay, we have to send this transaction off into the, you know, into the mining pool and wait a long time for it, depending on network congestion. So there's definitely a lot that comes from that quick transaction. And that magic moment was sort of what spurred everything here.
Yeah, definitely. I remember when I first used it, I was kind of like, wait, did that actually go through? Like,
right, exactly. Yeah. And then there's kind of like, then there's the conversation of what's the catch, right? And that's right. A good conversation to have. And it kind of leads into like the whole spectrum of decentralization and security. And do we have to be hardcore air gapped on every single transaction? Or can we drop into these faster networks, do some quick transactions, and then withdraw out to a colder place?
Yeah. And actually, I want to talk about that. So I think it's a good time to talk about. You mentioned that, and you know, this is on the POA network. Of course, all of these layer two solutions have some kind of trade-off, like you just said, in this decentralized trilemma, right? Can you kind of talk about the POA network? And, you know, do you have any concerns around the permissionness of it? And maybe kind of walk people through, I see a lot of misunderstanding of exactly what it is, kind of walk people through how this sidechain works.
Word, yeah. So the XDAI network or XDAI chain is basically an exact copy of Ethereum, where the native currency is actually XDAI instead of Ethereum. And to get that XDAI, you lock up DAI on the mainnet. So you lock up some DAI on the mainnet, and then these this bridge sort of sees that and then mints you XDAI on the other side. And I think the question here is like the security of that, right? You've got your money moving around on this side chain that works just like Ethereum, but the consensus is not proof of work. It's this proof of autonomy or authority or something like that, where I get confused. I think POA proper is proof of authority, but XDAI is proof of autonomy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you have these validators, right? And the validators, there's new validators getting voted in all the time, but there's still a handful of them, maybe 5, 6, 7. I bet we have 12 by the end of the summer. But you still have a group of people that are mining these blocks through this proof of autonomy, and they're keeping an eye on each other, but it still is not as good as proof of work. So we have to kind of keep that in mind, that this XDAI network is kind of like a burner network in itself, right? We don't want to have, when I asked Igor about this, he says, like, I say, Igor, you don't want to have a huge market cap here, right? Like, we measure all these other networks by how big this great market cap is. And really, you want to look at transactions and transaction speeds and stuff like that, because this is about getting in, you spending it, and getting out. So there is this sort of like, okay, if you have all these validators, and then all of a sudden someone is moving $10 million around on XDAI, that gets a little shifty. And, you know, like that sort of says, well, could a validator somehow, or could all the validators somehow, you know, collude against you? So you have to kind of keep that in mind with what you're moving around. And again, the burner wallet is just, it's analogous to cash. It's small amounts of money it would suck if you lost $10 in your pocket, but it's not the end of the world, right? You don't carry thousands of dollars around with your keys in your pocket, because if you pull out your keys and $1,000 falls on the street, that's really bad. But if it's just 10 bucks, it's not that big of a deal. So we have these burner networks where we can kind of make the trade-offs and get the good parts of it, like speed and low cost.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's very important. Like, we're starting to see different wallets, or, you know, I guess layer two solutions introduce these trade-offs. And not everything has to be all in 100% decentralized, right? Like the way you just put it, you know, if you're keeping 10, 20 bucks just for quick payments, or maybe you're going to an event that's using XDAI, like that's the perfect use cases. But this is by far not somewhere for people to, I mean, absolutely not cold storage, but even, you know, a hot wallet where maybe they're keeping 1,000, 2,000 bucks, like I would probably feel comfortable with that. But like you said, as the market, it's kind of like more the total market cap, like you were saying, because as that gets higher and higher, like how much do you trust the individuals that are kind of being the validators on that? So definitely. Yeah. And I think you guys have stuck to that with your interface too, right? Like you said, you log in and all of a sudden your private key's there in the browser. And one of my favorite things, like I would never use it for any type of other storage, but I like kind of the create your own seed phrase or brain wallet thing, because it's really easy then to restore it in other browsers.
Yeah, I love that. So that's what, so when you're saying $1,000, I would not keep $1,000 in a burner wallet where the private key was just generated for me. Because if I drop that thing in the toilet or something, it's gone forever. But if you have a pretty solid seed phrase and you type that into a burner wallet, then I think you're probably okay. But still, like, you know, the disclaimer is you could lose this at any moment. So know what you're doing and be careful.
Yeah, for sure. Generally don't keep too much there, but I do like how easy it is just to like open another browser or a mobile browser and just put a seed phrase in, or even if you created like a brain wallet thing. I always like wonder how many people are trying to like type in. Didn't you even have like someone try and figure out a brain wallet phrase and you can have the money? I think you tweeted that at some point.
They still have not found it. Okay, so it was three, I made it very clear. Like, there are three words from BIP39 or whatever. It's from the word list, right? I grabbed three English words from the word list. It should not take you very long to get through that. And I put $25 on it, but apparently it's not worth it or whatever. I guess I don't want to, you know, poke the beehive too much and get a bunch of people out there looking through it. But I personally have like a ton of different brain wallets of differing security with enough money in it that someone should steal it if they find it, just kind of waiting to see when people start getting in and start sniffing around. But right now, no one is really doing.
Yeah, well, now that we just brought it up, we might see some of the listeners. There you go. There's the reward. If anybody gets it, definitely tweet it out or something, because that'd be pretty funny. So I definitely want to talk about like kind of future use cases here and stuff. But one of the biggest hits, at least I've seen in using the burner wallet, has been around like event hosting and definitely ETH Denver. So can you kind of talk about how it was used at ETH Denver and kind of how you see, you know, ideal vision for something like XDAI and the burner wallet being used at events and what the benefits to, say, vendors would be?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So I think starting on this, I would like to talk about the Cypherpunk speakeasies first, these events that we held leading up to ETH Denver. So knowing that we were going to do ETH Denver, we knew what the flow would sort of be. We knew that the user would show up, they would get some kind of private key given to them on a paper wallet or a solid coin. They would scan that private key and it would give them a wallet on their phone, and then they would then take their phone to some vendor and they would scan another QR code to purchase something. So that's what we did at the speakeasies. So it was 6 weeks, once per week. We did six of these leading up to ETH Denver, where we just would go to a random bar in Northern Colorado and kind of invite people in and hand them paper wallets. And they would kind of go through this process. They would open up the paper wallet. They would point their camera at their phone's camera at the paper wallet. It would generate that account. They would go up to the bar. They would scan the beer they want. Bartender would see that they purchased it. They would have a receipt and they would get their beer. And we just iterated on that for 6 weeks, finding all the little kinks that happened in just human interactivity, right? Like, does this thumb button need to be bigger or closer to the thumb? Does this field need to be cached because they put one thing in instead of the other thing and then they reloaded and they lost it, right? So we did all of that leading up to ETH Denver. So by the time someone got to ETH Denver, they got a solid coin, they pointed their camera at it, they had a wallet, they went up to the vendors, they scanned the vendor's QR code, and they got a street taco, and it worked pretty well. And then to answer kind of the rest of that, what is the motivation there? So we sold like 4,400 meals. It was almost $40,000 off-ramped in DAI to the vendors, and the transaction fees on-chain were like 20 cents. So it was super cheap. And then I think if you look at even the wire fee, was like, Wire, WYRE, was like 0.25 or something like that. So it was still like, you know, thousands of dollars in savings probably because they weren't paying those credit card fees.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I think the savings from the vendor are huge. I mean, what would you say after kind of ETH Denver, what were, you know, people most excited about? And then I guess more importantly, I'm curious, like, what did you learn from the user experience side of what could still be improved or kind of what the biggest hiccups so far are?
For sure. Yeah. So I mean, like, the fun parts were, oh my gosh, I just used crypto to buy a taco and it worked, right? And it worked quickly. Like, there was this seamlessness to it of not having to put in a seed phrase and not having to download something and not, I don't know. There's a lot of classic dApps and classic wallets that I've used where there's just, it's you're chugging along and then you just hit this hard stop and that's it. And because of the early stuff and because a lot of the trade-offs that we're making, there weren't a lot of those hard stops, and that helped. What we did find though was that a lot of users either didn't know what a QR code was, or they happened to be trained from the previous ETH Denver. So from the previous ETH Denver, you got the same similar solid coin with a QR code on it, but it was just running on a Ruby on Rails app with a database. So that was just like your ID, and you would show it to a vendor and the vendor would use that to know. But in ETH Denver 2019, that was a private key, and that private key held funds. And so there was a fallback, and we made sure, you know, doing these UX studies, we knew that some people were going to just hand over their private key. And so there was something in the wallet that would allow a vendor to scan a private key, know that it's a private key, and withdraw one meal from that private key and then burn it. So they were able to still accept private keys. But the problem there was, we just didn't do a very good job training at the front door. A lot of people got those solid coins and didn't know what to do with them, or didn't know that they were a private key, and ended up kind of willy-nilly throwing their private keys around. So I think in the future, we're just going to get better at making sure people understand what's going on, having some better training, having some, just try to make it as intuitive as possible. And then I think a little bit of security too. Like, this thing runs on a website, and if someone could attack the network and take over the DNS, that could get pretty sticky.
Yeah, absolutely. Is something that you've looked into maybe running it on like IPFS with an ENS domain, or what are your thoughts there?
My like goal would be, it would be great if you, like, people just pulled it down from the repo and ran it, but that doesn't work for onboarding and stuff like that. But we could always have, so within the QR code of the, like, the within the onboarding QR code is a URL, because you just point the camera phone at it and it just goes to the URL and generates the account from the private key and pulls everything in. But you could totally have an IPFS URL there if you wanted to. But again, like, if someone owned the network, they could just hijack IPFS's one node that we'd be using and still redirect it and do some man in the middle stuff.
Right. That's true. So definitely some focus on security in the future then.
Yeah, don't leave your switches laying around on the floor.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, in my opinion, one of the best use cases I've seen so far for Burnerwald. And I think it's going to pick up a lot of momentum, especially for now around conferences and things, because it's just perfect. Like you said, I mean, all of us are kind of dying to use crypto. So, I mean, it's going to be a huge hit when it comes to that. But kind of, what are your, I know you recently announced the Burner modules. I think this was just a couple of days ago. And you ran an experiment, which was called Emoji Coin Exchange. Can you kind of talk about both of these and kind of, you know, I don't want to talk yet about more future plans, improvements for Burnerwall, but specifically what the Burner modules are?
Okay. Yeah. So kind of the way I think about the Burner, there's sort of these three levels. Like, level one is sending and receiving, maybe even creating a pop-up POS system. So within the Burner, you can just hit the request button and generate one of those QR codes that were stuck to the food trucks. So you, with just your phone, can create a shop with a couple button pushes within the Burner. That's sort of level one. Level two would be some kind of permanence, some kind of, you know, do you use a seed phrase? Do you transition to something more like a Gnosis Safe? Do you download a full wallet app? Like, how do you create permanence? Or do you have this paper wallet? Like, a paper wallet is permanence. Like, if your phone goes in the toilet, you can always just pull up a laptop and show it your paper wallet, and you've got permanence, right? Or at least, like, you can replicate that account. So that's level two. And then level three is sort of like, there's so many cool things in this space, so many cool pieces of technology that are running on smart contracts that just don't have the users they deserve. And I think that if we could integrate those smart contract interactions into the Burner with, like, a nice native UI where you could be sending and receiving, but you could also, you know, flip over and hit a couple buttons to buy a position in a prediction market or something like that. So eventually we want to have it very modular, kind of, we can talk about that, like, future plans, but right now it's sort of like, Ethereal is coming up in a couple of weeks and I want to have a prediction market in there. And I just don't have the bandwidth to get all that done, to get everything in there. So I wanted to create this modular system that would mean that you wouldn't have to wade through all of my Burner wallet code to be able to add something to it. You could just get this, like, a nice little React component that has everything. It has the XDAI Web3, your Web3, what the balance is, what commands you need to run, all the smart contracts, basically everything that you need for a dApp, I supply that component. And then you can just get in and focus on the logic of the component, which is really cool. So then I was like, well, okay, so once I have this component ability, what would be fun to make? So I made this fun little game where participants can, so it runs on a token, and that was called Emoji Coin. And that token could be exchanged for emojis in and out of the contract. So it was a normal ERC-20, but then it had these indexes of different emojis and their prices. And so you could buy a poop emoji or something like that at 54 cents. And then the prices fluctuated randomly based on block hashes. It was kind of like a running average of the block hash of different indexes. So obviously it could be gamed. It wasn't, it was meant to be gamed, right? It was just to see the overall goal of this was, okay, so if I have this stupid little game inside of a burner wallet and I have this paper wallet idea, can I drop into a classroom of students and hand out 50 paper wallets? What's it going to look like? What happens when I hand out that those 50 paper wallets? Are they going to be able to use it? What's going to happen? How does onboarding look? And it turned out quite successful, I think. I would say that within 2 minutes of handing out those 50 paper wallets, you can see on chain that 40 out of the 50 people were playing the game. And what was neat is they played it for 24 hours until the contract was empty. And halfway through, a couple of them figured out, they got into my React code and figured out how to like automate some of it. So the transactions like shot up. But they were averaging, in thumb traffic, they were averaging about 1,000 transactions per hour, those 40 students. So it's pretty incredible to think about kind of like how hard it is to get people into the blockchain space right now, how hard it is to get someone using a prediction market, and then think about, well, if they just open up their phone and it's there and they just can use their thumb to click a button and that's all that it is, and they're interacting with the smart contract, then it really lowers a lot of those boundaries and kind of opens up a lot of new, avenues to get users in.
Yeah, absolutely. I love how much exploration you do on the experimentation of the user experience side. I love how you mentioned you went to a lot of bars and just kind of handed out paper wallets, and with the emoji exchange, you just kind of said, hey, here it goes. And you just kind of observe and watch how it works. I think that's a great way to kind of find all the pain points and user experience issues that we have.
Yeah, for sure. The professor was having me come in to talk about kind of like basically what I talked about in Paris, and I kind of just hijacked the speech and started handing out paper wallets, but it worked great. And I'm very thankful for, I think Joe Gersh is his name. It was a computer science class here at CSU.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think, and just thinking of that, I don't know if you've ever, this is way off topic, but I once went to a bar in Europe that was like a stock market bar, and they had fluctuating prices on drinks.
I have seen those.
That would be a pretty interesting combination at a like a conference or an event of the burner wallet and integrating like drink or food prices into it and having that go. That would be pretty cool.
It'd be so much fun, and you'd get a ton of interaction. And the thing is, like, that smart contract took me 15 minutes to write, and the UI took me maybe 4 hours. Like this is a very simple thing to build, and then we just deploy it to some static web server, and you've got it, right? Like the back end is Ethereum, and the front end is a static website, and it's pretty easy to build with these burner modules. So hopefully we'll see more of these soon.
That's great. And I guess this is all enabled because you can run smart contracts on the XDAI sidechain, right? Are the fees still, I know the fees just to transfer are next to nothing, or is it kind of the same for contract calls too?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you just think in terms of fees, if you think about when you make an Ethereum transaction, you know how it's in GWAY or GigaWay, right? So you see like the 0.00001 ETH is what it costs, right? But that actually adds up when you multiply it by the price of ETH, which I don't even know right now, probably about $150. But if that's a dollar and that's, so it's $0.00001, then it's a lot cheaper, right? And that's what, that. So the whole thing is just shifted by a few orders of magnitude to be cheaper. So yeah, you can deploy a contract for a fraction of a cent on XDAI.
Yeah, that's great. One of my favorite things about XDAI, or when I first used the burner wallet, is how, at first, if you open it in a normal browser in Chrome, MetaMask tries to interact with it, but I actually prefer to run it in an incognito or like a mobile browser and not even use MetaMask, and it just kind of takes the fee right out of the transaction, which I think is great up for the user experience.
Yeah, you got to figure it out, buddy. I just recently also deployed this thing that gives you an idea of what the context is. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but if you have MetaMask injected, the background of the burner wallet is kind of like this MetaMask orange, or if you have some other Web3, it'll be this blue, or if you're in incognito, it'll be this kind of red gradient, just kind of like letting you know what context you're in at the time to help you understand what's going on. But like you said, I just love pulling it up in an incognito window. I go to advanced and I put in a seed phrase. Now, I don't think users are going to have to go through that same path. We need to have a much smoother path for them to go to level two of permanence, but I think it's coming. And that's another piece of UX research we need to do, where we'll have someone put in a seed phrase. And then we'll make sure they go through the same process where you probably have to type it again and compare it and you sweep. And then we'll just find out where the problems are there and where they like it, where they don't like it. If we find out they're typing in three letter seed phrases, you know, we got to do a better job of that too. I think we try to do emoji seed phrases, and looking at an emoji space of like 1400 or so, six emojis is not enough, right? You need more emojis. So we're trying to figure out a really good way to expose my mom to how to use seed phrases without it being like this big, nasty 12-word seed phrase, but also still having enough entropy that no one can attack it, but also something she can remember and repeat and use again.
Yeah, exactly. Doing that through emojis would be very interesting, actually. That's a cool idea. So I guess we've talked a lot about, you know, where we're at now at The Burner. I'd love to talk a little bit about the future. I guess first up, I have a question. Are you kind of working with teams, not really exploring like outside of using the XDAI network or the POA network, but, you know, I had Arjun from Connects on, and, you know, this very similar ideas between XDAI and DieCard. And then I think I also saw another solution out there by, I believe it's Matic Network, called CryptoStaw. So what are your thoughts about kind of, do you see benefits in a lot of different solutions popping up? And do you kind of interact with these teams or kind of have a vision of potentially combining solutions over time, or just your general thoughts there?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I just went to check Twitter because I was in a dev session with Arjun right before this call, and he did tweet about it. So basically, he's got, in the video, he's got his DAI card up on the left, and then on the right, we have a Burner wallet. It's a Burner module. Basically, we took the Burner module and we implemented the Connects API and object in there in JavaScript, and then I deposited some funds. I exchanged it over within his payment network, and then I shipped him some funds, and it showed up in his DAI card. So we were able to go from a Burner to a DAI card. And I think that's important. There's a lot of different people doing different things, and I think that's good, especially in a decentralized ecosystem. Like, we need to be kind of disparate in a lot of ways, but in some ways we need to kind of combine our momentum and get it moving toward onboarding for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, like, all these solutions offer, I think, good different trade-offs. So I think what you just said, how you were working with Arjun to kind of combine the two and be able to talk between the two wallets, I think that's the right approach, right? Like, kind of learn, but we also want to have like different options for different layer two solutions out there. So I think it's definitely important we don't kind of put all our eggs in one basket.
Absolutely. Like going, like thinking about that spectrum, right? The spectrum of decentralization, the spectrum of security, that means there needs to be solutions all along the way. And there needs to be just a ton of optionality for the user to be able to pick and know which thing is the right thing at that moment.
Yeah, definitely. I guess if you're thinking of it almost from like a traditional centralized payment network, I guess I kind of envision that like you'd be able to send money from like a PayPal user to a Venmo user in a way, which is not the perfect example, but I think that's kind of how you could visualize it.
Right, for sure. Yep.
What about on the, so I guess for me, I've used the wallet a lot, and I would say my biggest just kind of like pain point that I see, not personally using, because of course I already have crypto and pretty involved with it, but I could see a lot of kind of this, we still have the problem of fiat to crypto gateway, right? So right now the user experience on the Burner wallet would be, at some point you got to go fiat to Ether, or I suppose you could go to DAI, and then you have to go to XDAI. So there's a couple steps in conversion there. Have you explored at all doing any kind of one-click solutions to where people could be straight on the XDAI network and straight back off to fiat?
Yep. So I think the answer to that starts with, we have a wire branch from SendWire. We have a branch that has their widget integrated in. And it's still, I don't know, we'd like to have a native integration with Wire, so someone could easily purchase ETH with fiat, kind of more native within the Burner. You know how when you go to the exchange, there's this very, very native feel of you're moving stuff around and all the buttons still feel the same, but you're actually using Uniswap at one point, and then you're using the bridge at another point, and you're wrapping, you know, XDAI to get tokens. So I think that we want to take the Wire functionality, we'd like to build it in natively. And then so someone could just like hit one button, or like, actually they move a slider. I think if you go to wire.xdai.io or something like that, there in the exchange, there's a nice slider between $5 and $25. You slide to what you want and you hit go. You'll have to go through some KYC, just quick KYC, not something like it took about 5 minutes. I think my wife and I sat down and I had her go through the process, and it took her about 5 minutes to have money in her burner from her debit card. But there is the exchange still. She had to go buy it at Wire, and it dropped into her burner. It dropped in as ETH, right? And I think that's something that we should probably point out also, that a lot of people, I don't think it's clear to them that they can send ETH to their burner. Like, that's basically the best way to get onboarded, is just drop some ETH into your burner and then go to the exchange and move it north to XDAI. But that's what she did. She bought it with her debit card. She got $20 of ETH, and then she had to move it north in the exchange. So to answer your question about, is there a quicker way? So we came up with this, I think we called it like a rudder or something like that. But what would happen is you would deploy, I'm going to get a little smart contracty here. You deploy a contract on the mainnet that catches funds and sends them to a bridge, to the XDAI bridge. And then you have another contract at the same address. So you have to use this, the same nonce trick. So the account with the same nonce deploying a contract on either network, it's going to deploy the contract to the exact same place. You could use create2 for that also, right? So basically there's two contracts. They both have the same address. One lives on mainnet, one lives on XDAI, and they're set up to just forward stuff. So you would buy ETH on Wire, and it would send to the mainnet contract, which would send it to the bridge, which would send it to the same address on XDAI. And that contract on XDAI would then send it into your burner. So there is like this sort of rudder that we call it, a way of trick to sort of get XDAI from Wire. But what would be even better is if I just go bug Michael enough and he just has liquidity on XDAI, and you can just put in your debit card and get XDAI.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. However you get there, I think that's, I mean, I'm sure you agree. I think everybody agrees. Like, that's the one thing holding back all these solutions is kind of like, not even just like, at a point, I almost think you should hide, not you personally on BurnerWall, but we in general for a little bit should have the option to either like switch between the term DAI or USD. Like, a lot of people just try to explain DAI to someone. It's like rocket science, right? Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah. I mean, it's like if you just had the option of just sell the benefits of these layer two payment solutions, like very low fees and stuff like that, and all of a sudden they just click and they're on and they just see USD basically. Like, that's where we want to get, in my opinion, at least for the short term.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah. I think so. At ETH Paris, Alex Van de Zandt, like one of his slides, it was just show it in USD. That was the whole slide.
Yeah. It's so true. I mean, that's what we're trying to get to for now anyways, right? Like, I think in the future when there's more acceptance of crypto, but for now we should just kind of be true with ourselves and say that's what people want to see.
Yep.
So, you know, I guess one final thing, and I do want to talk about funding and leave a few minutes for that, but kind of what are your like, oh shit, this would be really cool in the future use cases that you could see for the burner wallet that go beyond what we see today?
Well, I mean, the long-term pie in the sky goal is mass adoption, right? It's my mom using it, and my mom using it not just on level one, but my mom using it on level three, right? I want my mom to send me an encrypted chat in my burner that she just sent like an invite to a game and put five XDAI up on it, right? like that would be the like best case scenario, is basically just everyone's just using it because it's what works. Igor from POA says you have to make it irresistible to use. And I think that if we could make it not just irresistible within the crypto space, but irresistible to everyone.
Yeah, definitely. I think having the modules and eventually like some gaming and stuff on there opens up, you know, a ton of possibilities, and that'll attract a lot more users, I think.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, it's sort of like once someone has something that's analogous to cash in their pocket, that's pretty boring. Like, my mom has $5 in XDAI on her burner wallet, but she has nothing to do with it. You sort of need to go all the way to Web3 to give people, or go all the way to level three to give people something to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they kind of get used to it, and then they start exploring crypto. Maybe they meet more people, and now they can use the funds to transfer, right, or go to a conference or something like that for now.
And when you store, so at level two in the permanence phase, when you decide you want to deploy a safe and store some funds in a safe and set up your laptop as like an N of M signer, where if you dropped your phone in the toilet, you could always use your laptop to get your funds out of your safe. When you deploy that safe, it'll probably be on XDAI at first. But then it's sort of like, okay, now you've learned the concepts, you've understood everything. Now you have $1,000. It's worth it to go to the mainnet and wait that extra 45 seconds or whatever to have that $1,000 in a Gnosis safe on mainnet, right? So I think that it's going to drive a lot of cool onboarding through education and just being fun to use.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with that. So I want to shift a little bit quickly. There's obviously been, a lot of heated debate over the last couple of weeks around funding. And how the community can find ways to fund vital projects. First, can you kind of talk about, you mentioned earlier, just kind of finding resources right now for burner wallets tough. Can you talk a little bit about how you're funded? You recently, I believe on Twitter, you mentioned potentially losing a team member or they just can't contribute to the product right now. So can you kind of just talk about that situation?
Yeah, it's kind of sad. So it's sort of... So basically after ETH Denver, we were like, okay, I can either get rid of, like, be done with the burner and we could just go back to doing Gitcoin R&D and we can have these weekly projects, or we could explore the burner farther and kind of just make it a better product and more mature. And I think we all decided that let's go the burner route and let's see where this thing, you know, what shakes loose. And so the guys that had helped me sort of that 8-week period leading up to ETH Denver, I wasn't able to pay anybody. I was getting a paycheck from Gitcoin, but I wasn't able to pay anybody else. And I had a small Gitcoin grant, so I'm able to pay for bounties and stuff, but not a senior software engineer level payment, right? So by the time that was 8 weeks kind of completed, he's done a lot of work. And now we're, you know, a month past that or two, and I'm trying to go to the ecosystem and say, hey, just all I need is enough money to pay this guy. And it kind of just didn't work. And maybe I'm bad at raising funds. Maybe the ecosystem is a little bit cold in winter. I think that the main takeaway, I think, is I think there's a psychological hang up with funding someone at 1/10 of the price you were funding people at in summer, right? So when you think about, oh, I want to buy a laptop for $2,000, you kind of have this thing in the back of your mind where you remember when you could have bought 10 laptops at the same price, and you almost don't buy the laptop because of that. And I think that's kind of where we are with funding right now. There are people, it is winter and we are, you know, pretty strapped for cash, but there are people with cash that are having, I don't know, they're having, I think, this psychological dilemma of, I could fund something right now and it is good for the ecosystem and I see the value of it, or I could not and maybe it'll be worth 10x.
Right, exactly. No, I fully agree with that. I think it's a combination of a lot of things, and crypto winners not contributing to it. I mean, I guess everybody that listens to this or follows me on Twitter knows that I try and explore as many options as possible. I appreciate everything kind of Gitcoin's doing to push it forward. And obviously you have your grant out there, so I highly suggest everybody kind of go contribute to that. I personally think one thing too is we're seeing a lot of calls for funding, but not too much transparency. Obviously we have the debates about EF transparency and, you know, if they're open enough with their payroll and who's on it and where the grants are going and how that's made. But I think maybe from teams that are looking for funding too, maybe we could do a little bit better. Like, hey, here's, you know, how much I think we need to survive another year, and kind of here are our milestones. Is that something that Burnerwald has thought about doing and putting out there? I personally kind of feel like that would potentially attract more funding if, like, what is needed and the goals are a little more tangible.
Right, exactly. No, and I think that's something that I've learned going through this process, is the smaller amounts and on a more iterative schedule are better. And talking to Rich at MakerDAO, like, he knows that we are the perfect, we are the poster children for a grant because like we're doing things in the ecosystem. We're having impact. We write about it like every week, right? We're like writing and tweeting about this every week, talking about like, here's the challenge we're after. Here's how we're solving it. And then we're on to the next thing. And we kind of do that in an iterative loop where it would be really easy to fund us on like a shorter schedule. And I think that's probably the best way to go. And even like kind of go all the way to the ecosystem. Like could we survive on a Gitcoin grant? Like we'd have to really up our game in terms of fundraising in that aspect. But I think, you know, maybe a big grant from the ecosystem isn't what we need. Maybe we don't need the Ethereum Foundation looking out for us. Maybe we need to be doing this ourselves on smaller Gitcoin grants and on a more iterative kind of like sell it to the community kind of thing instead of trying to sell it to one smaller entity.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's going to end up, in personal opinion, being a combination of things. I've started to think over the last couple of days after kind of hearing out all the block reward debates and if we should do it on 1.0 or 2.0, should it be voluntary? Should it be opt out? Like all this stuff. I think someone at a minimum needs to launch some kind of Patreon type model because I think like you guys in the Burner Wallet and a lot of projects out there have a pretty hardcore, like I guess I'll call it cult following that really like it. But it's not like some of the funding, like I'm a big fan of Gitcoin grants, but it's kind of like one click and you're done. And there's not much on there from the teams. Like I think we need a little bit more intimacy and the interaction between like the teams and the funding. I at least feel personally like that's how we're going to end up here.
Totally. And that's an easy change we can make. Like that's a Web 2.0 change. We can make that easy. let's talk to Kevin again. Gitcoin and have some more information in there. We could totally do that. And we kind of do, right? I think that you as me, as a Gitcoin grant recipient, I need to do a good job of communicating that there is this grant and there is this avenue of supporting us. And it's kind of like, it's kind of up to me to shill my grant. It's not up to Gitcoin. Gitcoin is just a platform and they provide the ability to do so. But it's up to me to sort of engage the community and talk about my updates and let everybody know where we're at, whether it's on their site or not. But I think it would be cool if we built it right into grants, just kind of like, here are some updates. Here's what we're up to. You know, here's a screencast of me shredding on emojicoin.exchange, right? Like there's a lot of cool things that I think that we're already putting out in the community that maybe we could implement right in kind of a Web 2.0 way, right next to that contribute die button.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, something honestly we've thought about on ETHUB too, like having some kind of more interaction with our quote unquote fan base, right? I think it's something we should take offline and maybe explore with Kevin and the rest of the Gitcoin team. But I mean, there's really no debate that we have a funding issue. I guess the question is just how do we get there and solve it? And I think that's going to be, personally, I think that's going to be a combination of things. But, you know, for those that are listening to this and want to contribute to Austin, the Burner Wallet team, the easiest way right now is to just go on Gitcoin Grants and they're out there. You can either subscribe to funding and give them some per month, either ETH or DAI, or you can just give a one-time grant as well.
Word. Thank you. Thank you very much. I love when someone else shills my grant.
Definitely. So I guess what's the best way for people to kind of keep up with you? You mentioned that you guys post updates from your team and all that. Is it Twitter? Is it the Medium? What's the best way for people to kind of stay in touch?
Yep. Usually my recipe is I'll write an article on Medium and then I'll do a screencast of the article that's kind of too long, didn't read format. And then I'll tweet the whole thing out so people can find it. So I'm usually pretty loud on Twitter if you just search for Austin Griffith.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for joining me, Austin. I think you're doing great work and definitely keep it up and we'll find your team some funding sooner or later, I promise.
Exactly. Yeah. Same to you. Like what you guys are putting together and the knowledge base and the podcast, like you guys keep up the good work too.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast. You can subscribe to us at podcast.ethub.io, as well as follow us on Twitter at econoar and @zazzle0x.